solar system, yes, not only within it but material and substance also, but of which your science at present takes no account, but will someday. But this is prophecy with which we will have nothing to do here. So these counsels being well sifted, I say, the chart is marked for the next voyage of Earth, commands are issued, and away goes the ship free of rudder controls, prow abreast the open sea. What position does the Christ occupy in these councils? This council, singular, you should write only one council, but meeting age by age. The personnel of that council is not static in absolute, yet it changes but little in a few eons period, they are so high, those great creative lords. Of them the Christ is president. King? I would not write it so, no. King of the heavens inferior to that heaven in which this council holds court, of that council president. This is of my knowledge delegated only, not of that to which I have attained empirically, but of that which has come to me and my brethren of this sphere by transition through those spheres which stretch above us. See you now? Or shall I still continue? Thank you, sir. I think I see what you mean as well as it is possible for me to do. So, it is well you speak as you do. It pleases me. For not I nor those in realms ahead of me some way are able to understand except generally what those high councils really are. In this same guise I have handed it to you and you content yourself therewith. It is well. Now let me go forward. You see now that he who is president of the council, the Son of God elect, is he who sallies forth to see the venture through. That is, in the eyes of those who work with me, as it should be, but he who shoulders the responsibility of a decision make bold to put it into operation and see it to an end. This did the Christ. Today he is in your midst with this present mission just beyond halfway accomplished, having reached the earth and turned about on the upward, homeward march. Do not wonder at my words. I am about to tell you of this matter in more of detail. That was an arrow in the bull. We will leave it there. It will serve as a mark to guide us to our goal, lest we stray away into the many bypaths on our journey. These are interesting, and are not without instruction and much beauty also. But they do not concern us here. I want to tell you of the campaign as it has reference to Earth. We leave the effect of it on those other worlds aside and speak of Earth alone, or at least in principle. Except this one alone. You were curious of our words about other planets. Now I will mention Mars. So much thought has been directed upon that solitary planet of recent years that it has become foremost of interest to those who are not of science but of ordinary citizenship. That is so, my son? Yes, I think you are not far out. The reason is reflex. The people of Mars began it. 3. They have directed a vast amount of thought waves in your direction and you have responded no, it is more than that. The reason for this intercommunion is found in the kinship between the people of Earth and Mars. Some of your astronomers speak of them so familiarly as to call them Martians. That would amuse them as it also gives us a pleasant little shiver of happy mirth. Well, those who know the Martians so well tell you they be much ahead of you in intellectual development. Do not they so, my son? Yes, quite correct. They do say so. They are in error. The people of Mars are, in some things, ahead of you of Earth. In other matters not a few, they lag behind you. I have been there. I know this. But these things you shall in time discover via your own scientific endeavors, and then they shall be all your own, and you will be the more justly proud to know them. That is why we often refrain and bring restraint upon our clacking tongues. It is why I do so now. You say you have been to Mars? Even as they of Mars have been to us and to Earth. See, my son, we do these things here efficiently. I am one of those who were embodied in that army of the Christ at the Tower. Other armies had been gathered, and others still were added later. Not one of all those myriads but is most carefully schooled for his one individual task in hand. You train your own armies in like manner. Some have duties on this and others on that. It was of significance to the competent execution of my own part that I should know of the state and progress of peoples other than my own of Earth. To that end I went to one university after another, so to say it. Very good. One of those universities was at the Temple of the Holy Mount, one at the Tower and the Five Domes, and another at Mars. What was your special work, may I ask, Anil? You speak of the past when you ask me was. My task is of the present. I am about it tonight here with you, my son, and thank you for your good aid to its advancement. Arnold. And next headline is, The Christ's Fear. Thursday, February 27, 1919. The events you have just related occurred, in Sphere 11, as I understand. Is that so, Arnold? That is so, my son, according to the enumeration of the spheres as my Lord Zabdiel-4 gave it to you. I see the point of your question, I see it half-formed in your mind. I will presently deal with the matter and clear it away and then to my narrative. I have told you already that the conception of this enterprise had its genesis not in the Sphere 11 but in realms much more exalted. You have read of the Christ Sphere. That is a real entity, but is understood by some in one way and by some otherwise. The spheres are so constituted both as to content and bounds, as to be not capable of any rigid tabulation in your philosophic habit of thought. If we and others speak of them, we must divide and classify them, however, and this we do for your better understanding. But, the method of classification is acceptance. It is not dogma with us. Yet if you search the wording, you will find a certain agreement among those who transmit their messages. Some say there are spheres seven and the seventh is that of the Christ. Five. Well, so be it. Zabdiel and I have spoken of spheres up to the 11th. Now, as we have marked them off, that of the Christ would be two sevens and one. In this way, two of these spheres of ours make one of those who speak of seven only. But methinks these should the rather say, not that the seventh is the sphere which contains the Christ, but the highest known of those which the Christ contains. In our numbering, the sphere 14 or the twofold seven is the highest sphere of which we of sphere 11 have any real knowledge. We are not yet capable of assimilating instruction of what obtains in those spheres superior to the 14th. So we say that, inasmuch as we know the Christ to be omnipresent in that sphere, needs must that he personally be of a sphere at least one beyond. For there is no section of all the circumference of that sphere where he is not found in presence. If he, then, contain that sphere in whole within himself, himself must also be produced beyond. Thus the two sevens and the one. That is so far as we here are able to reach in our reasonings on what instruction we have been given. So we say that, in this manner of reckoning, the sphere of the Christ is the sphere 15 which includes within itself all those 14 spheres inferior. This much we say, and yet refrain from definition of the sphere 15, either as to its bounds or conditions, for of them we know not. 6. But wherever its bounds be set, if set they be, it is from that sphere 15 that power and authority are given to those who rule in the spheres below. That is the limit of our imagining, beyond is to us the great unknown. I am able, however, to tell you one more thing and not break my caution. I must ever be guarded of myself that I give you not assumption under guise of knowledge. It is this. That council of the high powers of which I spoke is the same which gathers for deliberation from age to age. Their decrees are registered at times in earth records when revelation is made of them to those who are able to receive them. Thus that council met when the material cosmos was devised. Arnal. And next headline is, Angel Helpers. Friday, February 28, 1919. It met again when man became and stepped out of the vast chamber of age-long sleep and slow awaking into the brightening dawn of responsive activity and, for the first time, gazed abroad on those realms of future conquest to see what he would do. These, or some council delegate of these perhaps, noted the passing of Atlantis and, in later ages, those times of stress when some new element of man's potential greatness battled in its struggle for self-assertion in the economy of further progress of the race. The late impetus was given to your sciences of the phenomena from the same far realm. Men thought that phase the crown of the wisdom of those ages behind them. But finality is not found in this marshalling of material array, and the royal progress still continues on its road. For not here is the city of the crowning, but away to heights beyond. You have just made transit of the valley and gathered the pebbles from the streams therein as you passed. You bring them with you now against you meet the lapidary. 7 That shall be some day, and he will burnish those pebbles bright and beautiful for the kingly crown. But he dwells not in the valley, nor among the rises where now your way is laid, but up among the highlands where the light strikes full and warm. Here is the porch of the palace royal where dwells the king his court, but himself is afoot on active service way down the below with his myriads where he once again walks earth unseen, and in his train we march who speak to you and do what work he has given us to do. Do I understand you correctly, Arnul, that the Christ is at the present time on the earth plane and that you and many others take your orders from him? From whom else should we take them? Note you, my son, the remarkable forces at work, and judge all fairly. Your science, intoxicated of its own exaltation, has made one more leap and troubled over out of the material into the ethereal, this against those same precepts which urged it on. Signs and wonders are spoken of diverse sorts, and what was once a whisper now gives place to exclamation. Look around you and you will see, reflected in the waters over all the earth, the smiling faces of us myriads, all at work and busy always. We are silent, but you hear us, we are unseen, but our fingers ripple every wave. Men say they feel us not, and yet our presence envelops you, and we make merry to be poking those same fingers of ours into every pie you make. We do not steal your plums, no, but the pie is the sweeter for our contributions. A tinker left his pewter bowl upon the seat where he had eaten his evening meal, out in the porch to his cottage, and went to bed forgetting it. The old cat, in the darkness, came and found what meat he had left and ate it up. Then for bed she stepped into the bowl which she had found so savory. But it was very hard, and many times she turned herself round and round to make herself snug there. But all that happened was that she polished that bowl with her soft fur coat as it had never been so before. At dawn the tinker sallied forth, and in the morning sun the pewter shone like plate of gold. Now, said the tinker, here be strange doings. The meat is gone, but the bowl remains. That the meat be gone spells thief, yet that the bowl remains, and all brightly polished, cries good friend. But, being reasonable man of mind, I think the solution to the matter lies this way: I ate the meat myself, and while I drank my mug of ale I, meditating on the stars and other high matters, polished it the while on my jerkin gathering combings of the clouds, as men of mind will do. And here comes cat to verify. See you, cat, is not this pewter bright, and did not I, your master, burnish it? Or, of your uncanny wisdom, tell me who? And the cat made an answer, me, and avoided finishing her meow, being a cautious cat. For in the bowl she saw her own face reflected. And the tinker said, poor dumb beast. Well, it is well your master has both wisdom and speech to voice it. So he took the bowl inside and, with pride, he laid it upon the sofa for his wife to see. But she looked out of the window and said only, cat settles herself for sleep. Wise cat is she, and ever was. And I suppose in this parable of yours, Arnul, you are the cat? But one hair of the cat, my son, but just one hair am I, no more. Arnul. And next headline is, the purging of the spheres inferior. Monday, March 3, 1919. Our first business to take in hand after that stage wherein I was called to join in the enterprise was the clarification of those spheres inferior. All these were in touch with Earth nearly, and had given their guidance in the ages preceding. The inverse is also a fact, namely, that they had received into their composition such contribution as Earth made from generation to generation. This is of necessity, because the spheres are recruited from Earth, and those nearest to Earth more immediately. As people come over by way of Death's Port, they are, as you know, taken in hand and helped on to clearer views of life. Old errors are gradually purged away, new light is gradually accepted and assimilated. But keep it ever in mind that no rigid law binds life, either of earth or of the heavens. Free will is sacred and operates continuously and universally. It was in consequence of this element, this supreme factor, its presence in the spheres, that it so happened that in the process of purifying those who came over, they also received into themselves a certain degree of default. Most of the Eriso brought over had undergone a process of transmutation into elements beneficent and good, but not all. This same free will, so fugitive of logic and of all bonds whatsoever, had permitted some elusive erratic particles to mingle in the life of these spheres and to remain suspended in their atmosphere. This element had accumulated. It had not attained to any very serious proportion, and in the ordinary course of things would have been left to the development of future ages. But just at that time this was not good to do. For this reason, the trend of human development had been downward and outward, towards and into matter. That was God his purpose, namely, that he manifest himself in detail of form phenomenally. Because this way was downward set, the elements of error increased in greater measure than the reservoir of spirit into which they were poured from earth was able to absorb, assimilate and to transmute. It was, therefore, necessary that on our way to earth we clarify these spheres. And this we did preparatory to our more intensified operations on earth itself. Why more intensified? Earth is always operated on from these realms. This was to be an intensification of those operations, an access of dynamic urge of such degree and impetus as should serve to send the hoop spinning safely down the lower slope and give it a good start on the upward turn on its way toward the peaks across the valley. This has now been accomplished, and the ascent is well begun. So we acted as a film of gelatinous compound acts upon a cask of wine. As we slowly descended, a steady cloud of workers, ever vigilant and careful and close-knit together, we bore down with us and beneath us all those elements discordant, down, ever downward, towards earth. This has continued for generations past. And as we, being constant in our movement and irresistible, lessened the space between our far-spread array and earth in its plane, those elements between us and you became ever more concentrated upon their own content. By and by they began to flatten out over earth itself like a thick vapor all in movement, ever becoming more frantic and frenzied as the elements of which it was composed jostled each of the others, wanting room. This commotion increased and extended as we pressed more closely round the sphere of earth, and ever more and more they mingled in earth's life and policies until they at last burst through the encircling envelope ethereal altogether and became of the economy of the world of men. Behind, above us, we, looking upward, saw the heavens cleansed of this age-long rising vapor, and brighter and more beautiful for their cleansing. Below us, where that same vapor had been compelled, well, my son, need I enlarge? He among you who has eyes to see may see the effect of our operations ever more potent these few centuries last ago. It were a dullard indeed who should say today he did not see our work in its effects. But when these dire forces broke into your atmospheric belt, so to borrow a phrase from your sciences, then we, still pursuing them in their steps, burst through also hard at heel. And here we be, arrived and in possession of the field at last. But, my son, it has been a long, grim battle of the forces, yes, long and grim, and fierce at times, my son. We have won through it with the good comradeship of the manhood of your race, and their women, also wonderful to us who have, time and again marveled in our joy to find such metal in your womankind. Well, well, you have suffered, you of earth, considerably, and we love you more because of that. But no, my son, if we gave blows straight and heavy in the fray, we also took our wounds not few nor slight. We suffered too, with you. And we were glad we suffered when he came close enough to see how you were suffering, too, so greatly. It helped us as we helped you. It helped us much to see it. Are you speaking now of the great war, Anil? Of that as a climax? But ever in increasing force, as I have already said, this war has gone on for these ages past. Its martyrs have been many, and many phases has the war passed through. You would find it strange were I to table for you all of these. I name but a few of these phases: the phase religious and theological, artistic, political and democratic, scientific, the warlike phase which took such vogue this last millennium as to absorb well nigh all dynamics into its wide open mouth. But we have won through together, And now together we will foot it onward up the heavenly ways towards the sunlit peaks ahead. The valley lies behind us in the gloom. So, we take our staff and turn our faces upward, and on our war-marked limbs from yonder peaks there falls a gleam which makes our wounds into garlands upon our breasts and bracelets around our wrists and of our torn and soiled garments, lace of filigree beautifully wrought. For our wounds are honorable wounds, and our garments witness to our deeds. And our great and common captain is the Christ who knows what battle is, indeed, and wounds as well. My blessing, my son, I am not sad tonight, but the battle is yet scarcely silent to me today, and within me stirs the heavenly slogan still, and my hand grips tight at times to think of it and what we did, and more of what we saw, and of the tears we shed for you of earth, my son. Yes, we were tearful, more than once were we, and more times still. For we had a vision clear of him who led us on, and your poor sight was heavy with the mists, so you saw him but dimly, if at all. And we were pitiful for you all, my son, because of the very thing. And yet through all our tears, responsive of your own, we looked upon you in wonder, and not a little awe, to see you fight so. But oh, how you fought, you sons of men, how well you fought! I say we stood still to wonder, until we reminded ourselves that you too were warriors of the same king and captain even as ourselves. Then we understood and, weeping still, rejoiced and turned our gaze towards him where he stood commanding, and so we made our worship to him on your behalf. Go on now, my son. My blessing to you, and to my brother men of earth greeting in great love and benediction. Arnold. And next headline is the reason for the expedition. Wednesday, March 5, 1919. What I have given to you, my son, is an account of the enterprise so far as it came within my own personal understanding. I have given it in a lump, and not in detail. I shall now speak to you of some of the incidents of which I was a witness to during the time of our progress earthward and on our arrival. But I will begin by telling you this: our operative descent was continuous and irresistible. It never rested and its pressure never was removed. The closeness of our ranks was never destroyed. Nothing from below could break through. But the individual details were not ever constant. I speak in earth words and use your earth ideas when I say that our various companies were from time to time relieved. Then they took themselves up to rest in their proper homes for a while, or make some softer and less strenuous expedition among the free realms of the heavens of God. For the enterprise that pressed earthward was local and, as to spatial comparisons, very small. The whole field of our operations did but fill a minute speck in an outlying corner of the cosmos of matter. The significance of it was of a spiritual kind. I have already said that the effect of earth policies had been felt even in those spheres somewhat removed from earth. But this effect was beginning to be of wider extent and had been felt on other planets, so that some of their dwellers were experiencing a sense of shrinking, some were bewildered and muddled as to the cause, not knowing its origin. On other worlds the origin was sensed and Earth identified as a troubled and troublesome member of the planetary confraternity, these the more spiritually advanced. Had not we, who knew Earth by actually once having lived there, taken the matter in hand, it would have been dealt with initially from those planets. Those who have become so evolved as to have gained the art of intercommunication already had begun to exchange counsel. Their motives are very noble and spiritually high. But their methods are of their own evolution and are not such as Earth would have understood. They would have been so severe as to have produced such an excess of God-denial such as would have thrown you back a brace of centuries just when you most needed a forward push. Think of this when you are troubled by thinking of the sufferings of those who have led the world these thousand years past and those who lead today. But it was made known to those planetary worlds that the Christ had taken the matter in hand and then they summarily offered him their aid. This he accepted and has used them in reserve, so to put it. They have sent to us of their virtues in a stream of power to reinforce our own. So have they sustained us in greater strength, and so also has the fight been shortened. Keep these few things in your mind therefore while I tell you of our doings in more detail. Those incidents are such as will serve to help you to understand something of past history from the causative point of view. In future times men will study history more from this inner side of it, and will then be able to correlate the outer events of the world's progress in more understandable form than is presently the case. It is so strange that men should take so small an account of us and our doings. For you do dwell upon the earth widespread and with large spaces unpeopled. So you in total are still but few. We surround earth on every hand and our ranks are spread back upward through the steps and stories of the layers of the heavens. So we are many, and each one of us of power greater than most of you. Ah well, the dawning light will send its rays aloft and search us out in our hiding places amid the light and brightness of the spheres. Then earth will feel less lonely as it rolls along the meadows of the void. Earth will know in that day that all about those meadows fairies play and elves disport themselves in their merriment, and that earth is not lonely but at one with the myriads of the redeemed of earth who have linked up humankind with those afar who dwell on planets, some of which you see of a clear night and others which are not visible to you of earth. Nor will they be until you put off from your low-lying shores and sail your boat toward the open sea, toward the great expanse, toward the western region of the sun. Arnal. And next headline is Chapter 6, The Heavenly Armies of the Christ. Thursday, March 6, 1919. Far out upon the heavenly steppes were flung the armies of the Christ. One after another they rose in their ranks and degrees. I with my own companies stood upon a terrace which at that moment seemed to be suspended in mid-heaven, neither atop nor at the bottom of that great ocean of beings, each drop a warrior with his own task. For a marvel had been wrought which even to us of the Sphere 11 was new and unusual. The preparation of us all for our entering into the fray had gone on apace with diverse effects upon us. One was that, while our magnetic capacity had been enlarged in each one of us by the inpouring of virtues both from the heavens above us and from those planetary rulers of whom I told you, our faculty of vision had also been enlarged beyond the ordinary, so that we were enabled to see far into regions previously concealed from us. The purpose of this was the coordination of forces, that is to say that we were given a wider range of vision in order that we might watch the movements of those in degree above and below us, and so suit our own movements to theirs. Thus we should the more perfectly work together to greater advantage. Those below would take heart also of the apparent presence of those of brighter and stronger from whom, moreover, they received leadership and direction in the fray. So it was that I gazed in awe at the sight above and below and on every side of me. I had seen beauty and many great wonders, but none so great as this. Below there appeared layers of colors manifold, one beyond the other, as I gazed earthward. These were the distinguishing colors of the spheres between my own and earth. They were the garments of the armies marshaled ready to descend. Below them all, forming a background to them, I saw the mists of vapor swirling about the earth. Murky, thick and horrid they appeared, with streaks and shooting tongues of red and dark green cleaving the dull slate-brown clouds which whirled here and there like thick gelatinous substance, as those serpents of evil darted here and there about their ghastly business of the hells. One, we did not shrink, we did not fear as we looked upon the sight. Yet we took hand, one of another, in love and comradeship, and were very solemn a while. For our journey must be against and through that offensive mass. Earth lay within it, and we must win through to earth, for our aid was sorely needed there on that dark planet. The thought came to me as I gazed, how can man abide within that awful hell soup and still breathe and live? As to ourselves, our task was to absorb what we might into our own economies by transmutation, as I have already said. What should prove to be insoluble must be driven into the deeper hells for to decompose of itself, so to say it. A pretty meal for us, you will say, and not very savory. And that is truth. But we were safe to be enabled for our task, safe both in our myriads, and in our leader the Christ. Then we turned about and looked aloft. That they stood, or moved softly, terrace on terrace of those brighter ones. Each terrace was a heaven, and each heaven, as then displayed before us panoramic, was a step on the great flight of stairs which stretched up and away mountains high, in dizzy space suspended, until it entered into impenetrable radiance and the top was lost to sight. Only those some spheres beyond us up the ever-brightening rises were competent to look into that light and see what was there. To us it was a void of light, nothing else. Yet it gave us strength to see those myriads within our range. How lovely were they, those most near to us, clad in robes of lustrous material of hues unknown to those below us.